Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is August 16, 2010, and you're listening to show number 72 of Who's Reading the Organon. We'll be reading aphorism number 51 today, and if we have enough time, we'll go on to 52. To begin our inspiration, this one is a special one. Shout out to Vera. This is from Twitter. Someone named Emma Chocoholic has quoted Vanessa Redgrave. She says, ask the right questions if you are to find the right answers. And Vera is always asking about questions, so I thought that would be good for her. And the next inspirational quote comes from Mike Myatt, who retweeted Scott Williams, and says, the more you focus on what people think, the more you lose your ability to think. And this just confused me so much, I thought I would send it out to the airwaves and tell me what you think about that one. And the next inspirational quote comes from Smile Lotus. It was retweeted by Desert Linus and Palladin. So you can see in Twitter how many people are circulating a particular aphorism or inspirational quote that touches them. This one says, smile. It is the key that fits the lock to everybody's heart. And that is a quote from Anthony D'Angelo. Vera, hi.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, everyone. How are you doing?
I hope everybody's having a good day or a good night wherever they are on the globe. I know we are both in the moon and the sun. So wherever you are, make it a good one. There's an American Indian proverb that was retweeted by Eugene 12 and Duncan Paisley. It says, we will be known forever by the tracks we leave. So hopefully, well, this is what we're doing. We're following in the tracks of Hahnemann, hopefully to his intention of what he was trying to teach the world, the healing community, about the laws of nature and how to do a methodical approach and get the right answers. So we've just walked in a whole circle today. I think if there's nothing, let's see, anything going on the network, I wanted to mention that we do have over 2,000 members on Homeopathy World Community. I'm doing my best to keep up with the blog, and that the blog on the network is my own personal interpretation of the sessions that we're having together. So if you're commenting there, recognize that this is my personal view. And I'm just going to take it away from here. We've got a lot to talk about, and if you want, take a look at HWC and look at all the discussions. That's it. Vera,
okay.
Up to you.
Well, we just wanted to respond also to Melanie, who wrote about more delving in terms of the Organon. It's really worthwhile reading as much as possible about the historical medical context of the time. And it's just not something that we're doing really within the show, because we're trying to get people to read the Organon and to hear Hahnemann in his own words, Hahnemann unplugged, if you will. But the delve is definitely part of it, and I encourage people to do that. Anything to add there,
okay.
Debbie? Okay, so
no,
shall we just...
just that you are constantly trying to keep me on track when I veer off the way, and I think I try to bring in as much diversity as possible so that we explore, but we want to eventually come back to the narrow track of the proper way of understanding the Hahnemann as he spoke in the Organon. Okay.
I think also, one of the things that I have heard others say as well, and definitely corroborate it, anyone who can get their hands on Hahnemann's lesser writings, I think it's available for download as well, get some sense of who the person was through his own words rather than our interpretations of his words. Because he's fascinating. He could be extremely funny, can be very sarcastic, he's very sharp. And as you read more and more of his work, you start being able to move with the flow of it, being able to follow more easily. Anyway, Aphorism 51. This therapeutic law, we're talking about the therapeutic law of nature, cure by symptom similarity. This therapeutic law is rendered obvious to all intelligent minds by these facts, and they are amply sufficient for this end. But on the other hand, see what advantages man has over crude nature in her happy-go-lucky operations. This also relates to Melanie's comment or question regarding the expression lucky concurrence. Nature doesn't set out to heal itself by giving a stronger similar disease. It just happens, unless you're going towards spiritual concepts that there is no such thing as coincidence, which is also true, but not within Hahnemann's mandate here.
Mm-hmm.
Saying
that's a huge topic.
Yeah, it's a huge topic. I think it's a
topic
for another year's radio show at least.
Oh yeah, you could do a whole another show about fatalism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So see what advantages man has over crude nature in her happy-go-lucky operations. How many thousands more of homeopathic, morbific agents has not man at his disposal for the relief of his suffering fellow creatures in the medicinal substances universally distributed throughout creation? In them, he has producers of disease of all possible varieties of action, for all the innumerable, for all conceivable and inconceivable natural diseases to which they can render homeopathic aid. Morbific agents, medicinal substances, whose power, when their remedial employment is completed, being overcome by the vital force, disappear spontaneously without requiring a second course of treatment for its extirpation, like the itch. Artificial morbific agents, which the physician can attenuate, subdivide, and potentize almost to an infinite extent, and the dose of which he can diminish to such a degree that they shall remain only slightly stronger than the similar natural disease they are employed to cure, so that in this incomparable method of cure, there is no necessity for any violent attack upon the organism for the eradication of even an inveterate disease of old standing. The cure by this method takes place by only a gentle, imperceptible, yet often rapid transition from the tormenting natural disease to the desired state of permanent health.
Mm-hmm. And here he does speak of gentle. I'm thinking of this very much as a gift that humanity has, that mankind has, to be able to make these adjustments to health, whereas nature, it seems like it goes back to that thing about being, I don't want to say fatalism or power or something that's going on, that nature itself does her thing, Mother Earth does her thing, and we now are responsible for making adjustments and utilizing nature to its best advantage. It's kind of a broad view.
I'm not sure I would use the... I think we see nature here in two elements. First of all, we see nature in the element of natural disease. And that's crude nature producing natural diseases. in a way that is coincidence, lucky concurrence when it actually cures, unlucky concurrence when it kills. But we also have nature that produces substances that produce disease of all possible varieties. And here we're talking about all the substances that we find in nature that can alter the state of health. All the medicinal mm-hmm. substances that can create symptoms, produce symptoms in a healthy person. And for me, it's always been fascinating because here we see, how many times have you heard people ask, why was a poisonous tree created? Why was a poisonous fruit created? Why is poison ivy in the world? These things are unpleasant. Why does the bee sting?
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of questions about the less pleasant things that exist in our world. And Hahnemann mm-hmm. has managed to harness these producers of disease through homeopathy mm-hmm. in order to cure. So mm-hmm. it kind of puts a crowning touch on creation, almost telling us, and you think you see these things you always thought were bad for you, look at what gifts they bring. So we mm-hmm. see these two sides of nature. On the one hand, nature can produce certain diseases, natural diseases, in a way that may be helpful but is often harmful. But on the other hand, in here, if you want to use Mother Earth or mm-hmm. divine design or however you see it, has provided the antidotes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the chicken and the egg to me when I think about it, because we've spoken in earlier shows that you often find the remedy, the cure to your illness in your environment. Therefore, is it you producing that substance, that whatever is in your environment through your being there, your intention, that you're living there? Or is it the reverse? Is it, well, you were dropped onto the earth through your birth at this spot, and this is all around you, and it's going to be there for a healing or maybe a harmful aspect of your life?
If we take this to, mm-hmm. to the philosophical direction, I think that that's fine. But any substance that we're dealing with, because this does relate very strongly to the continuation. Any substance that comes into our lives, we can use it, we can abuse it, and we can harness it
uh-huh.
for good. I mean, I remember hearing somewhere about, I think that cocaine was originally used by some tribe which used it as part of a religious ritual, and it didn't harm anyone. It didn't cause addictions. Mm-hmm. It was used within a certain framework. There are certain mm-hmm. groups, certain cultures that use alcohol within a certain framework, and alcoholism is less found in these groups.
Alcohol is less found?
No, alcoholism.
Alcoholism
is less common.
Alcoholism.
It's okay. less common in a group where alcohol is used within structure. The whole idea that we can have substances, we can use them for good purposes, or we can abuse them. We can have a little bit of coffee, which can be beneficial to the system, or we can be crazy over coffee and have far too much of it and be harmed by it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and here mm-hmm. Hahnemann gives us the other option, we can take coffee, attenuate mm-hmm. it, subdivide it, potentize it, diminish the dose of it, and then use it to cure any kind of disease that is similar to the effects of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So philosophically, it is interesting, the idea that everything in our planet, we can approach mm-hmm. in these different ways. We can say we're the victim of it and just fall into abuse of it. We can just enjoy it, or dislike it,
mm-hmm.
or we can harness it.
Well, I still think this gives us a lot of power in the world and a lot of responsibility to use it in the right, to use these substances in the right way. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we're given all of these things as gifts, and how do we perceive them and utilize them to the best benefit of improving the world? And that is our mission,
mm-hmm.
to do that.
Well, Hahnemann says, see what advantages man has over crude nature. And he harps back to that man has a God-given intelligence to learn to use and harness the substances we find around us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So nature just does its things without rationalizing and intellectualizing and deciding, should I do this or should I do that? Nature just does it based on being. And it's not when the disease comes, it's not picking and choosing somebody. I think I'll take this disease and give it to this person or that person. No, it's not in that way. It just happens.
Although
we
don't know if you remember, they used to have in England, at least, they used to have chickenpox parties.
Mm-hmm, we did too.
You had them as well in America?
Yes.
For those who don't understand the concept, the idea was that parents would deliberately expose their young children to infection by chickenpox to get it over and done with.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right, and it, because a younger person can cope with it and throw off the disease much easier than if you got it as an adult, and also it wouldn't be as life-threatening or intense,
mm-hmm,
as a child typically than a person who, like, if you were pregnant, it would be definitely a not good thing, or if you were an elder person, it would definitely not be a good thing to try and deal with that disease. So is there anything else going on here in aphorism number 51 that stands out? It seems as if he says, for all conceivable and inconceivable natural diseases, which basically he's trying to be inclusive of everything, mm-hmm, whether he knows about it during his lifetime or anybody knows about it happening or not. He's definitely trying to, when I do a meditation, I do a similar kind of speak where I say, whether it's something you see or don't see, whether you feel or don't feel, the healing power within you will go to those places and heal you. And in the same way, he seems to be covering all the bases, whether he's spoken it or not spoken it, when
mm-hmm
he does something like that.
Yeah.
And then he also says, without requiring a second course of treatment for its extirpation. And I'll tell you the truth, Vera, I had to look that word up because I had no idea what it was. And it says that it is the process of extirpating or destroying totally by tearing up the roots. In other words, getting the condition totally destroyed so that there's, you know, when you're working in the garden and you just take the top off of a weed, the root is still there and it's still going to keep growing and coming back up. So extirpation is to really take it out fully and completely by the roots. And therefore, he's saying in that way, you don't need a second course of treatment because it's totally eradicated.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty strong words. And what the physician's highest goal truly would be.
It's interesting. I think all these things, and when we look at Hahnemann's writings, and we remember Hahnemann was a physician, and he treated people before he decided to leave conventional medicine, and he was considered a successful, effective allopathic doctor. He's not talking about that. I know there are some homeopaths who, for some reason, limit their practice to ear infections in children or to the occasional cough, cold, flu. And Hahnemann is talking about the power of remedies to overcome conceivable and inconceivable natural diseases, like a huge scope for homeopathic remedies. I think that's something that's good for all to internalize and not to trivialize the ability of homeopathy to cure.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's always good to go back and remind ourselves of the times that he was living and the experience and the knowledge that he had and where he was moving, from what place did he move, and direct his attention and get his understanding about disease and healing. The other thing, well, it seems like there was something else going on. Oh, yes, I wanted to mention that in aphorism number 51, he says some of the things that you were saying last number of aphorisms he didn't say, and that was the word gentle, that mm-hmm. in previous aphorisms he didn't put that in, and now he is. And what is the change from those other ones to now? It's the cure by this method takes place by only a gentle, imperceptible, and yet often rapid transition from the tormenting natural disease to the desired state of permanent health. So what is the difference between that previously in aphorisms 47, 48, 49, and 50 to this one? Is it because he's talking more about chronic illness or the application of the...
I think maybe it's because here he's talking about the application of the principle. He's talking... again, from this very starting out place, in the same way as at the beginning of the Organon, he refers to gentle. I know there are homeopaths who say that ultimate cure cannot be gentle. There will be some pain, some upheaval. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that Hahnemann believes that it can be gentle, and it should be gentle as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And over time, he was learning how to do that in the sixth. I don't think we've mentioned much, but he did six editions of the Organon, and each time he made its revisions and updates and new learnings and things that have happened over the course of the development of homeopathy. So at the sixth edition here, we are learning methods of application that will be more gentle, more that fine-tuning that you've discussed before about tuning in on the radio or the dial. And maybe mm-hmm. this is where he could apply that word. Okay. Do we want to go on to aphorism number 52 today?
I think maybe just read it, and then we'll revisit it tomorrow.
Okay. Let's see how far we go. I can read it.
Okay. Great.
There are but two principal methods of cure. The one based only on accurate observation of nature, on careful experimentation and pure experience, the homeopathic before we never designedly used, and the second, which does not do this, the heteropathic or allopathic. Each opposes the other, and only he who does not know either can hold the delusion that they can ever approach each other or even become united, or to make himself so ridiculous as to practice at one time homeopathically, at another allopathically, according to the pleasure of the patient, a practice which may be called criminal treason against divine homeopathy. Now, this aphorism number 52 is a question that is running throughout all homeopathic societies, organizations, internet, online lists and discussion groups. And here he's giving a definite answer to the question mm-hmm. that is in our mind. Can we practice both allopathy and homeopathy? And he does say, though, there's a little extra thing he says, according to the pleasure of the patient. Now, he says that not so as if it's you know, like in today, the commercials on TV are, the drug commercials are announcing to the general population, there is this new drug that does this, 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 and this. Go to your doctor and ask for it. And this is putting the responsibility or the knowledge into the hands of the patient, whereas the practitioner, the doctor, the physician, should be the one who is experienced in knowledge through training and years of working with so many clients to know what is best for the patient. And I think mm-hmm. that is a little special thing that he's got in there, and you might have a different take on it. what do you say? You've got plenty of time to talk.
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, doctors have told me that nowadays their clinics are reduced to patients coming in saying to the doctor, I heard about this, prescribe it for me. And either the doctor wants to argue with the patient or not. But it's one of the things that I found very often in practice, and it's something that however much you learn it theoretically, you only really learn it when it happens. When you're treating a patient, you're treating the patient, and you have more knowledge about homeopathy than the patient has. And sometimes the patient is very insistent, for example, about redosing. Let's say the patient felt euphoric after the first dose of a remedy and says, I want to take it again. Can I redose? Can I redose? And sometimes we're swept away by the patient's enthusiasm, even if we know that it's too early for the patient to redose. We know there's something going on, but we get kind of pulled in the direction by the patient, and we can figure who's doing the treatment here. This happens obviously much more at the beginning of treatment when you're new to it, but there are some patients who are extremely forceful, and there are also patients who self-medicate, which is a whole other problem. So part of what Hahnemann is saying here is that it's not a question of when the it's not a question just of when the homeopath decides to skip between one and the other method, and homeopathy is definitely alternative, not complementary medicine. For that reason, it's very difficult to do any kind of integrative practice with homeopathy and conventional medicine. But there is this element of making sure that you're making the decision independently of from the patient or from the patient's family. Because you have knowledge that they don't. What were you going to say, Debbie?
Forgot. Marilyn is putting a comment on the chat. She says, why do homeopaths say that that homeopathy is complementary to conventional medicines? I guess, Marilyn, we say that because we have to give them an answer. And we're trying to find the easiest way to explain it to somebody, but in essence, it is not. It is own form of medicine. And we will continue this discussion because we're out of time, and I'll put your comments up on the blog. Vera, would you like to say your goodbyes? Anything special before we end? You have a minute.
Nothing remarkable. Have a great evening.
Nothing
great
remarkable.
Afternoon. Wherever you are.
Okay, well, I think that, Vera, everything you say is remarkable because we are talking about Hahnemann and his teachings. He was a genius in his time. He is still a genius in my mind, and I have to keep revisiting his words and learning. Everyone, I will see you tomorrow. Vera will see you tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. And
bye.
We shall say goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.